You're listening to SBS News.
You're about to hear a replay of the acclaimed four-part audio series Stateless. First broadcast in April, the series explores the stories of those who belong nowhere. Of the millions of displaced refugees around the world due to persecution, conflict and strife, many are also stateless. Journalist Yusuf Saadi was recognised for the series' impact with an honour of highly commended in the media category of the 2025 New South Wales Humanitarian Awards. While this episode can be enjoyed as a standalone, the series is best experienced in order, from episode 1 through to 4.
Wherever you see the police, wherever you see the arm, instead of seeing the security, the safety, instead you run.
If you didn't say your actual identity, you can live there. So my dad have to pay money.
Hiding, running, and dealing with trauma. These are just some of the issues stateless people have to face in their lives when trying to find a home and safety. So what does this look like? When can you feel like you finally belong somewhere? In this episode of Belonging Nowhere, we try and answer that question and explore some of the diversity of stateless people. We begin in the western suburbs of Sydney, in Liverpool, where hundreds of Banya Malenge community members from across the country have gathered. The Banya Malenge people are a minority ethnic group from the Democratic Republic of Congo. Their nationality has been disputed, and they are usually described as stateless people from South Kivu.
The assailants struck with deadly force. Armed with guns and machetes, they shot and hacked dozens of refugees to death, then torched their homes. The Katoomba camp had been a sanctuary.
Two decades ago, there was a massacre at a refugee camp in Burundi. More than 150 people were killed on August 13, 2004. And rights group Human Rights Watch reported that many were Banya Malenge.
At least 180 Tutsi refugees from the Democratic Republic of Congo have been massacred in a United Nations refugee camp in neighbouring Burundi.
The community has recently commemorated its 20th anniversary. Organisers hand out candles and people shake hands and hug as they greet each other for a special ceremony. Claude Mucho is a community advocate. He says when the DRC's borders were first established, those who were Banya Malenge became Congolese. But he explains the Congolese community didn't accept people like his minority group, and the community was isolated.
Till now, there is no schools, there is no running water, there is no electricity. So they live kind of like a bush life with no single right in Congo. You don't have right to vote. You don't have access to education, to healthcare, you know, all those benefits for any other citizenship.
South Kivu is where Claude Mucho was born and where some of his relatives still are.
I really remember those moments where we used to run wherever you see the police, wherever you see the arm. Instead of seeing the security, the safety, instead you run.
So why are Banya Malenge people treated this way? Delphine Tenyoma is a visiting researcher at the University of Leeds in the UK, who is also part of the Banya Malenge. He says they are a Tutsi ethnic minority in the DRC, who have been discriminated against because politicians, both locally and nationwide, do not recognise them as Congolese.
Since the 60s, up to recently, they have been experiencing a sort of rejection. Their nationality revoked. In the 90s, the Congolese government and the parliament has resolved to expel them by sending them back to Rwanda or Burundi.
Dr. Tenyoma told SBS News that Banya Malenge are a stateless group who are facing a slow genocide by local militia and armed groups, but it's lacking media coverage.
For many years, these militia and armed group have been attacking and destroying the Banya Malenge homeland. It means the territory where they used to live has shrunk a lot.
Yeah, under huge pressure of being wiped out in DRC.
Claude Mucho says he heard stories about people having to walk up to 3 days to be able to attend school in other parts of Congo, and it was hard to go back home. People also had to protect their identity.
Either you need to change your names for them to not identify you, where you're from, and also you need to pay a lot of money to get enrolled where other Congolese community, they can't pay fees for that. And it was really, really tough time when my brother and my sister tell me those stories. Wherever you need to go in the shop, you need to cover yourself with a mask or something for them to not see you and identify you where you're from. Otherwise, the rest of the community can stone you, can kill you, can get your things, your property, and whatever you possess, and then take it. And then you can't go to the police to claim that.
Mr. Mucho still remembers being a child living on a mountain. When trouble approached, the locals banged drums to alert the village to run and hide in the bush in fear of their lives.
It was scary, and a lot of community, they still have that kind of trauma where even in Australia, some people, it's hard for them to go to the fireworks ceremony at the New Year, because once those shout comes, once those fireworks comes, it's a trauma. They can't handle that because it brings those memories and what happened in the past.
Mr. Mucho escaped to Rwanda when he was 5, but the feeling of not fully belonging lingered.
In Rwanda, still, there is that gap of sense of belonging. And for me, my thought was like, I need to find a country where I have access to and the benefit for any other citizen. And this country, I will call it home. And that's what I was in my mind. I need to find a country, and my children, my grandchildren will live safely.
He now has Australian citizenship. While it took going through a few visas to get there, including a student visa and a protection visa, he now feels like he is home. But he says more can be done to support stateless communities like the Banyamulenge.
A lot of people, they are illiterate in their own language. So I'm trying to break those barriers, language is the barriers, but also on how can you access the services and resources that is in Australia. What happened is a lot of people, due to faith, culture, language, they kind of doesn't have ability really to go and seek support.
He says there's a gap in service delivery for his community, and organizations do not reach out properly to minority groups like his.
For some communities, it's hard even to book appointment. Language issue, you know. Even they've been intimidated. They've been discriminated in their own countries. So how to trust the government agencies if the government have been discriminated them, have been killed them?
Jorge Arroche is the Chief Executive Officer of New South Wales' Service for the Treatment and Rehabilitation of Torture and Trauma Survivors. He told SBS statelessness can be a mentally tough journey.
Being a stateless creates uncertainty. It makes any processes to seek protection, to begin your life elsewhere, a lot harder. And therefore it contributes to that being situation of being in limbo. And that's can have tremendous impact on people's mental health, because you know it adds to whatever other trauma, whatever other traumatic events they're dealing with.
Mr. Arroche says further awareness is needed to help support stateless people in Australia.
There's also individuals that fall through the cracks sometimes, and those situations are harder to resolve because you know you need to, I suppose, clear the background. But in general, I think more awareness about, I suppose, the impact of not being recognized by any country, not being able to, you know, have any resort to protection from any country because you're not a citizen of any country, is something that certainly could help. I think most people in our society probably don't even know that there are individuals that are stateless.
Asma is from the Rohingya community from Myanmar, formerly known as Burma. Rohingya are a Muslim ethnic minority group who have lived for centuries in the predominantly Buddhist country. Despite living in Myanmar for generations, the Rohingya are not recognized as an official ethnic group and have been denied citizenship since 1982.
Bodies strewn at the mouth of the Naf River, the border between Myanmar and Bangladesh. Ethnic Rohingya, men, women and children, hundreds killed. Drowned as they tried to escape the fighting between Myanmar's military and a powerful rebel group, the Arakan Army.
Clashes are regularly reported, as in that story from Al Jazeera. The United Nations says they're the largest stateless community across the globe, and about 1 million Rohingya refugees live in the world's largest refugee camp in Cox's Bazar in Bangladesh. Born in 1988 in the Arakan state, Asma moved with her family when she was one to Rangoon, now called Yangon, the largest city in the country Myanmar. She and her family had to hide their identity to live safely. She went by the name Kin instead.
If you didn't say your actual identity, you can live there. So my dad have to pay money, and then pay money means you have to make an ID to live there. Because if you don't have an ID, you can't live in the Rangoon city in Burma. So we have to act like we are like a Burmese Muslim.
She says she happily grew up as a Burmese Muslim, a tolerated minority, even though she didn't wear the hijab at the time, and she still felt like she couldn't be too visible about her religion. But Asma didn't know that she was Rohingya until she finished high school at 18.
Then I asked Tom, that we are Rohingya? I said, my dad said yes, but we can't tell anyone we are Rohingya.
But despite people not knowing she was Rohingya, she still had fears of being kidnapped. On one occasion, she thought her taxi driver would, because he saw one of her relatives wearing a hijab. In 2013, Asma and her family came to Australia, feeling targeted and afraid of being found out. While she is working now, after more than 10 years in Australia, she just received her permanent residency in February 2024.
So how many years I have to stay like that? So is the limbo situation is very hard. Because of my visa, doesn't matter how good am I can't change my position. Because of my visa. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's like, feel like it's a discrimination. Yeah.
Katie Robertson is the Associate Director of the Peter McMullen Centre on Statelessness. She's been working on refugee and asylum seeker issues for more than a decade.
We have very limited protections on the ground for stateless people in Australia, firstly. And secondly, we have a really limited knowledge and understanding of statelessness in terms of demographic and numbers in Australia as well.
She says the way the immigration system is set up in Australia can cause stateless people to continue to belong nowhere.
Stateless people in Australia can face a life of limbo, because at best they may have been placed on a temporary protection visa by virtue of also being found to be a refugee. Or at worst, if they are not found to be a refugee, being placed in prolonged and until recently indefinite immigration detention. And the problem is for stateless people is that when no country in the world recognises you as belonging, there's no country to return to, and there's no country that the Australian government can return people to.
Professor Robinson also highlights that while stateless people can become refugees, the two are not always the same.
It's really important to stress in this issue that stateless people are not refugees. They are separate issues. And I think this often gets conflated. And I think that that conflation runs the risk of minimising or misunderstanding the serious issue of statelessness.
When Asma saw a gap in the support for Rohingya women in Australia, she and her friends founded the Rohingya Women's Organisation to fill it.
If they need something else, they don't know where to go. Like Australian government is not actually not helping everything. We try to help our Rohingya parents, our Rohingya women are educated, and then how to live in Australia, Australian style, and whichever like a paperwork and stuff. Like if they need an interpreter, then we do. Like we're helping all the women, whichever they need.
It's similar to work Claude Mucho is doing with Banyamulenge people.
A lot of people, they come with a trauma. They come with a mental health, really severe mental health. And there is a lot of psychiatrists here, a lot of psychologists where they can help. I work with the community and I work with these services on how can we put easy way for the community to access the services and also for the services to work effectively on how to work with this community. and to break those gaps and navigate different systems in Australia.
The next episode of Belonging Nowhere is going to look into the Middle East conflict and the people affected by the headlines being made across the world. And if you or someone you know needs support, call Beyond Blue on 1300 224 636 or call Lifeline on 131114. I'm Yusuf Saudi and this is Belonging Nowhere. You can listen to more wherever you get your podcasts.